Many general practitioners do not realize the extent to which they are using psychotherapeutic skills in maintaining good doctor-patient relationships and in dealing with the emotional problems of their patients. While the psychopharmacologic drugs have helped to bring about a significant improvement in the treatment of mental illness, the unique doctor-patient relationship found in general practice, in which the physician has an intimate knowledge of the patient's family and total environment, has put the general practitioner in the front line of the fight against mental illness. Further use of the existing psychotherapeutic skills of the general practitioner could play an important role in reducing the incidence of serious mental illness. He is in the strategic position of being able to recognize and treat emotional disturbances before they require the attention of the psychiatrist. As a part of its contribution to this effort, Roche Laboratories is presenting this series of records in which leading American psychiatrists will act as psychiatric consultants in discussing problems seen by the general practitioner. Among the subjects to be discussed will be the recognition and treatment of anxiety, depression, and psychosomatic disorders. This record continues the discussion of problems that may arise in doctor-patient relationships with Dr. Daniel Blaine, president of the American Psychiatric Association and director of psychiatric planning and development at the Institute of the Pennsylvania Hospital, Dr. Dana L. Farnsworth, director of the University Health Services, and Henry K. Oliver, professor of hygiene at Harvard University and chairman of the program committee of the American Medical Association Congress on Community Mental Health Services and Resources. Dr. Howard P. Rome, president-elect of the American Psychiatric Association, chief of psychiatry at the Mayo Clinic, and chairman of that department in the Mayo Foundation Graduate School of the University of Minnesota. Asking this panel of psychiatric experts questions concerning doctor-patient relations is Dr. Carol L. Witten, instructor in medicine at the University of Louisville and a leading general practitioner of that city. He is speaker of the Congress of Delegates of the American Academy of General Practice, which, along with the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association, has strongly supported courses in psychiatry for general practitioners. The first voice you hear will be that of Dr. Witten.
Dr. Rome, I'd like to ask you, what can be done with a patient who is obviously depressed or nervous, but who will not open up about what's bothering him to the doctor?
A great clinician a long time ago, Sir Arbuthnot Lane, said of a young girl who would not open up, "It's not that she cannot, it's not that she will not, it's that she cannot will." And I think that this is a most important point, for one has to wait. When the apple is ripe, it falleth from the tree. And many, many times in our impatience, we shake, push, cajole, struggle, ruin a situation that is slowly maturing as a consequence of an impatience on our part. I think we just have to appreciate the fact that people develop trust at varying periods of time. And as a consequence of this, not everybody is able to trust instantaneously. So that until such a time as our chemist friends are able to come up with instant trust that can be dissolved and poured on these two people in this relationship, we're just going to have to sit through and wait until the apple is ripe.
Dr. Farnsworth?
I think a very difficult task for the practicing physician is that of learning that the patient must make his own interpretation of the meaning of symptoms and that no one else can do it for him. The skill lies in bringing the patient out to where he can do that.
Dr. Blaine?
There's an important job to be done, and that is, remember, the patient is very vulnerable to stress, and that patient needs support, and that patient needs perhaps a stronger bond with the doctor before he can trust himself or dare to come out and tell him. And I think the doctor must keep those things in mind and do whatever is necessary to give him the support, give him a little advice about what to do between now and the next time he comes, anything at all. You don't have to talk about the depression.
Dr. Farnsworth?
For several years, actually up until about a year ago, I have kept my identification as an internist at the Mass General Hospital, where I visit on the medical wards, and do not bring in my psychiatric experience at all. As I try to take care of the patients with all kinds of serious diseases, there are just as many psychiatric problems there that we, in a sense, ignore as on most psychiatric wards. It seems to me at times that we almost have a conspiracy of willful ignorance about the emotional role of our patients. It is very interesting to try to bring this out, and I think the interns appreciate this very much.
Now, Dr. Farnsworth, let's say that the physician is uncertain whether the symptom complex of the patient is organic in origin or psychosomatic. What can the doctor do to determine what the basic cause is?
Well, in the first place, the doctor should keep clearly in mind that all diseases are psychosomatic. Any ailment of any kind has an effect on the patient's emotions, and strong emotions have an effect on the physiological functioning of the individual. It is often quite desirable for the doctor to try to develop the kind of confidence in his patient that will tolerate uncertainty. He can point out to him that it is more desirable to observe what is going on here over a period of weeks or months than to move into some kind of action that may be ill-advised. So again, we get back to confidence in the physician-patient relationship. Can uncertainty be tolerated? It's that kind of a process of tolerating uncertainty that is so important.
Dr. Rome?
Last night at 10 o'clock, I saw what for me is a typical psychosomatic patient. This was a woman who had a grade 4 carcinoma of the breast with metastases to the pelvis, to both femora, and to her lower lumbar spine. I was called in, presumably because of the fact that her intractable pain required an increasing amount of medication. It turned out after a while that her concern and apprehension about what it was that was staring her in the future and what it was that was responsible for all of this, and the fact that she felt that she knew what it was, but her family, for reasons of their own, chose not to talk with her about the problem, created then this psychosomatic problem out of what would otherwise be organic disease, so that the patient in the person and the person in the patient has always need to be considered in prescribing any complete kind of therapy, even in such, quote, hopeless situations as terminal carcinoma, for example.
Dr. Farnsworth?
It often happens that a doctor's own anxiety as he deals with patients with very poor prognosis is such that he has to take refuge in planning various new diagnostic schemes or speculating over changes in the body chemistry. He may do this in a very businesslike fashion to avoid coming to grips with the real problem and sharing his concern with the relatives of the patient. It seems as though we are not yet as able as we should be to comfort our patients and to comfort the relatives as we are going through what on the surface are hopeless situations. I think physicians are in as good a position as the clergyman, and perhaps better, to sustain people through these relatively hopeless situations. We need to pay a lot of attention to that.
Dr. Blaine, it's been said that a doctor-patient relationship is a great deal like a parent-child relationship. Do you agree with this?
I think it often is that type of thing. I think it would be better if it were more of a relationship between two peers. On the other hand, the person coming in looking for help is, of course, frequently like a child who is looking for help from an older person.
Dr. Farnsworth, do you think that the compliant patient is a good patient?
Not necessarily. He may be temporarily acceptable or preferable to the physician, but I prefer to have a patient who is not necessarily compliant. I don't want one who is hostile, but I think the relationship between the physician and patient should be such that questioning is permissible and desirable, so that there can be the kind of give and take which does result in good learning on the part of the patient.
Compliance not infrequently is a mask for passive aggression. And I think this is an extremely important thing that the physician has to be very wary of, and that is that the individual patient seems to accept the doctor's ministrations unquestioningly, and yet the doctor has the feeling that he's adrift in a morass, for he has no response at all, fails to get the important feedback necessary in order to have him guide his therapeutic course accordingly.
Well, Dr. Blaine, would you think there are such things as compliant doctors?
Well, I think they are. And I think that people who fall into that area of not being willing to say, no, I'm not going to give you this, that kind of a compliance on the part of the doctor is also very unhealthy.
Dr. Rome?
Obviously, the physician at the outset has to recognize that his education goes on throughout his entire professional lifetime, that he doesn't assume the role of a physician when he walks into his office or he picks up his stethoscope. He is, throughout his entire range of relationships with people, constantly dealing with them, constantly sharpening his most important tool, himself.
I'd like to say that I became interested in this field of psychiatry after I had been thoroughly started in the direction of internal medicine and practiced it for a while with major interest in pathology. But when a psychiatrist, who was a very good doctor in Boston, went on the wards of the medical service like all the others did, we all noticed that he always found out something about that patient that no one else had thought of. And furthermore, the patient always felt better.
Dr. Rome?
The three psychiatrists whom you have here did not get into psychiatry initially at the conclusion of their training. I think we have all been involved prior to going into psychiatry in internal medicine in its various phases, and it was only subsequent, in my own instance, to an experience in internal medicine that I became intrigued with the psychiatric aspects of it, and I think the same thing's true of Dr. Farnsworth and Dr. Blaine.
Thank you, Dr. Rome.